at 10:15 on Flashpoints. KJ No analyzes the underlying meaning of the recent flare-ups between North and South Korea. Also, members of Food Not Bombs are getting arrested for feeding the poor in liberal Santa Cruz, California. And Miguel Gavilan Molina and Alejandro Reyes discuss the dangers faced by journalists in Mexico from drug cartels and the corrupt government. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host producer Dime Roberts talks with Olga Sanchez, artistic director of Milagro Theater, about La Luna Nueva, a multidisciplinary festival that kicks off Milagro's 35th season. She'll be joined by Susan Adi of the Obo Adi Legacy Project and Ora Nui Tahitian Dance. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews abstract painter Michelle Ross about her show Trust Falls and Transparent Things at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre following this.
Cable Community Radio is proud to present Arresting Power, Resisting Police Violence in Portland, Oregon, as part of the Cable at the Clinton monthly film series. Arresting Power documents the history of conflict between the Portland police and community members throughout the past 50 years and creates a space for understanding the impacts of police violence and imagining a world without police. Again, that's Arresting Power, Thursday, September 10th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is September 1st, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Coming up, we've got guests this morning, Max Wilbert. Whoa, this is really touching a live wire here. Some people are going to be extremely upset that we have someone with deep green resistance on the show. But Max has been up to the camp at the Unistoten camp in Canada, in northern BC, in a very remote place where activists have been amassing and supporting themselves, living and working in traditional ways. That is basically what this is about. Damien Gillis with Common Sense Canada has written about this as well, describing it as at the end of a series of Forest Service roads west of the sawmill town of Houston, BC. There's a solar-powered cabin on the banks of the Morris River. This is a very remote place, and it is under serious threat right now. Max is going to talk about that and talk about, again, deep green resistance, some of the criticism, and why deep green resistance forges ahead in protecting the earth. Sometimes we have to think of climate change in terms of environmental change and recognize that the habitat is all that we have, and that climate is not something that is separate from our environment, that all of this is interconnected. And that is why coming together right now to protect places like the Unistoten camp up in BC, and like another site in Canada. It seems that we're going to be up in Canada today a bit. Before we have Max on the line waiting patiently, but before we get to that, I just want to mention that though, Cooler waters in the Columbia mean that sturgeon are not as under threat as they previously were. There was a die-off this summer, as many people probably recall. So that is one small note of good news. And returning back to Canada, there was a song called Harper Man. It's a folk protest song offering a whole array of criticism against Prime Minister Stephen Harper. The video of the song racked up 400,000 views on YouTube so far. And it also got the composer of it, Tony Turner, 19-year veteran of Environment Canada, got kicked out of his job for doing the song. It's not necessarily a unique thing for the CPC. The Code of Ethics for Environment Canada employees says that a nonpartisan public service is what they're all about. But nonpartisan public service at this point, that would be indeed nonpartisan. The environment is not partisan, is it? No, it isn't. And it's what we're, that's what exactly this is all about, what Environment Canada is indeed supposed to be about. Meanwhile, up in Alberta, up near the tar sands, the Athabasca Chippewan First Nations are an intensely active group of people who are defending the land that they stand on, defending their habitat, their environment, and all the interconnected species and parts of this complex, very complex ecosystem. What happened, if you will recall, is Nexen, this huge oil company, has a pipeline running through. It's part of the tar sands. There was a horrific leak this summer, horrific, that destroyed a great the water, the land, everything, traditional places, sacred places that have been Athabasca and Chippewa for millennia. It's no exaggeration. And the people there weren't taking it lying down. They fought back. And we've been trying to get Chief Alan Adam on the line for a while. Also, Ariel Durange. If you go, however, to the Athabasca Chippewa First Nations website, there is a long video where she describes, or Ariel describes, exactly what happened. Now the latest is, and the reason why we are revisiting this, is that after a month, Alberta's energy regulator says that deficiencies in documentation and pipeline monitoring are what caused the decision to suspend 95 pipelines operated by Nexen Energy at an oil sand site. I beg to differ. I think it was actually activism on the part of the Athabasca and Chippewa First Nations, who did indeed raise hue and cry and stop this from going through. This suspension, however, comes a month after the pipeline that was owned and operated by this company spilled 5 million liters of water, sand, and bitumen. Pipeline operators in Alberta are required to keep records on how they monitor pipelines. This is true also in the case of the Unas-Totten, which is where the camp is, and where we are going to be talking to. We're going to be talking to Max Wilbert right now with Deep Green Resistance. Good morning, Max, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Well, the entire planet is in serious trouble, much worse than most people care to face up to and admit. It's lovely for Obama to go to Alaska after signing off on Royal Dutch Shell's Arctic drilling adventures. Lovely, isn't it? And for Obama to say that climate change is the biggest problem we face. Well, yes, it is. Thanks very much, Barack. But in fact, climate change and whatever you want to characterize it, should perhaps be rethought in terms of environment collapse, habitat collapse. It is not separate from the planet. We, as a planet, are dying. This is all part, whether one accepts the Gaia principle or not. I think that the Gaia principle probably has got some surprises for us in store. And on that note, what up in Canada, this very remote, along the Maurice River, the camp has been set up, has been defending, been stopping pipelines from going through, stopping fossil fuels from being moved around the planet. Can you talk a little bit about the encampment and what you know about it at this date?
Sure. So the Unist'ot'en camp is led by traditional indigenous peoples. It's the Unist'ot'en clan of the Wet'suwet'en First Nation. And they're living on their traditional land with their traditional leadership structure in place. And stopping pipelines physically, they've just built their camp in the GPS coordinates of these pipelines. And because of the geography, the mountains, and the rivers, it's a choke point. And I think that's something that everyone needs to be thinking about in terms of activism in general, is what are the choke points, what are the strategic bottlenecks in the systems that we're fighting against that we can focus our work towards so they can have the biggest effect. And I think the Unist'ot'en camp is a great example of that, because you have a small group of people, relatively small group of people with a wide base of support, who are stopping an extraction project that's continental in scale. And that's really what we need to be thinking about as a movement as a whole, because as you say, we are losing these struggles.
And this is a really important concept for people to understand, is to we have the tools to do it now. We have, we're using GPS coordinates, using maps of the Earth. It is possible now to determine these crucial choke points and take control of those in order to prevent fossil fuels from being anything more being taken out of the ground. Leave it in the ground is should be the call right now. But once out of the ground, determining the choke point is vital in the struggle to prevent, because these spills are inevitable. Can you tell us more about where the encampment is now? We've been through a summer of activism and heading into the winter. Support for the camp is coming from all quarters. Can you talk about the next action and how long the First Nations camp is going to hold out there, and what they're facing in terms of the violence that some of these companies are willing to do to those who oppose
them? Absolutely, yeah. They've been there for more than 5 years now, and they're not showing any signs of letting up. The leader of the camp is Frida Hewson. She's the spokesperson, and lately, what they've been dealing with is threats from the RCMP. There's been a lot of rumors floating around that they're going to send in 100 police officers and arrest everyone at the camp. The RCMP recently released a statement saying that they're not going to do this, but that doesn't preclude them taking some other action, like arresting people on the road or some other underhanded way that we know the police often do, because, of course, they're fighting to protect the rights of the corporations, which get priority in the system that we live over the rights of the land and the rights of the people. So they're on high alert right now up there at the camp. They're constantly taking donations and volunteers. They need people to come up and chop wood, carry water, do all sorts of projects on the land. They're working on building a new healing center that's going to be a place where people, especially indigenous youth, will be able to come and get healing, traditional healing, and different healing methods from around the world, alternative systems of medicine to help people regain their health and recover some of their cultural basis that has been so undermined by the dominant culture that we live in. And the connection with the issue down in Oregon here with the Nestle bottled water plant, yeah, at Cascade Locks, is that the Unist'ot'en camp is on the Maurice River, which is pretty pristine. There's been quite a lot of logging and mining in the broader region, but the river is clean, and you can drink straight out of it. Whenever you go up to the camp, you're drinking river water. It's not filtered. It's not treated or anything. And down here in Oregon, we have Nestle, of course, the largest food and beverage corporation in the world, wanting to install a 118 million gallon per year bottled water plant at Oxbow Spring, which is, of course, another pristine water source. And I don't think many people realize that beyond the impacts of the plant itself, obviously bottled water is an environmental catastrophe. It's a multi-billion dollar industry worldwide. but this specific spring is very important to salmon and steelhead in this era of climate change and global warming that we're living in, because it provides an influx of cold and cool water into the Columbia River. So when the river is exceptionally warm, and of course the main cause for that, global warming contributes, but the main cause for that is actually the dams, mm-hmm. because it stops the water from flowing and turns it into a lake that can really get warm. That cold water comes in, and when the Columbia is really warm, the fish will go to the spring, and they will have a place where they can be safe. It's not as stressful on them. It reduces their mortality and disease rates. So this is really a very important place that Nestle, of course, in their tradition, wants to completely destroy for profit.
Max, hang on. We're almost out of time. I'd like your final closing thoughts on this, because I, watching what Deep Green Resistance has been doing on behalf of the planet, it is in fact doing work on behalf of everyone, and despite some of the things that have been said. So I just want to invite you to wrap up and give people notes on where they can go, resources to find out more about all of this work that you've been up to.
Absolutely. Our website is www.deepgreenresistance.org, and you can find a lot of FAQs there, as well as information about what we're doing, chapters around the world, and how to get involved.
Thanks so much. My guest, of course, has been Max Wilbert with Deep Green Resistance. This has been Air Cascadia for September 1st, 2015. Janet Ellison, Janet and Jeanette, the show for today. Thanks for that, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present Who is Gil Scott-Heron as part of the We Real Cool Jazz Series at the Clinton Street Theater Thursday, September 17th at 7 p.m. Who is Gil Scott-Heron is a portrait seen through the eyes of those who love Gil, his friends, his family, and the musicians he played with. All